Okay, so good morning, everyone. Before I start, let me firstly thank NACA and Department of Agriculture for sponsoring my attendance at the meeting. As some of you may know, I've not been involved in aquaculture and aquatic animal health for some 5 years now. My work has focused more on understanding the fundamentals of why new diseases emerge in the broader sense across human, animal and aquatic animal health. So let me just put this talk in some context. In the human health area, emerging diseases are what we call EIDs, emerging infectious diseases, and they're defined loosely as diseases that have emerged or are increasing in their global distribution, and the time frame that's placed on that is usually around about 20 years. There was a paper published in Nature in 2008 that looked broadly at these issues, and they identified that emerging infectious diseases actually account for 12% of all human pathogens. 54, you know, just over half of them, are rickettsial or bacterial. About a quarter of them are viral. And 60% of EIDs actually have their origins in animals or wildlife, livestock or wildlife. Of the bacterial infections, most of those are the transfer of antibiotic resistance, so the emergence of bacteria with increased resistance to antibiotics. And we know, we all know, that that is a global problem. You'll see here many examples of emerging infectious diseases that have become household names. Right now, we're facing the emergence of MERS in the Mediterranean region, which is a disease very similar to SARS that emerged in Hong Kong 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Hendra, here in Australia, Hendra virus is something that everyone in the community is aware of. It's an emerging disease that comes from bats through horses to infect humans. And in Asia, the Nipah virus is a very close cousin of Hendra virus, which also has, in that case, killed many people. When we look at these diseases, we're looking at very, very big impacts. We're talking about, for just SARS, for example, in the short period that SARS caused havoc in the world, it's estimated that the economic and impact of SARS is around about $20 billion. When we look at things like Ebola, we see viruses that have very, very high case mortality rates, around about 50 to 75% in many cases with those types of diseases. HIV has killed 36 million people since it first emerged in 1981. In 2012 alone, 1.6 million deaths around the world. And if we were to see highly pathogenic avian influenza, that is, avian influenza emerge from chickens into humans and then be transferred from human to human by the respiratory route, we could be looking at 20 million deaths around the world in a single year. So that's a disease emergence event that's great concern to many people. So if we look at our own territory here, we've seen a similar history of disease emergence. In blue, diseases of finfish. In green, some examples of diseases affecting shellfish. And in red, the shrimp diseases. In Australia, you can see GAV, EHNV historically have emerged here. Abalone herpes virus has caused significant problems in southern Australia. In the Asian region, of course, white spot syndrome virus out of China, EMS probably also out of China, EUS is in fish in the region, yellowhead virus in Thailand in the early 1990s, and then equally in other parts of the world we've seen the emergence of significant diseases. And I think probably everyone is very well aware, we've already touched on this morning, of the sort of consequences that we see. We may not be looking at human deaths, we may not be looking at impacts that can be measured in a period of 6 or 12 months of $20 billion, but we are still looking at very, very significant impacts. And I think white spot syndrome virus alone, the total accumulated effect of white spot syndrome virus around the world must now be approaching $20 billion. If not more. But there are other effects on environment, on the livelihoods of people, that are extremely important in the aquaculture industry. So I thought it might be useful to think about what our report card might be after 20 years or so of experiencing these emerging diseases in aquaculture. Biosecurity awareness. I think that there is now, certainly in my experience from when I started working in aquaculture, the understanding of biosecurity and the importance of biosecurity as an integral element of industry activity is far, far superior than what it is. I think there is a broad understanding of its importance. Responsible industry practices. I might be a little bit generous here. I think it's very variable in different parts of the world and in different farming systems. But increasingly, industry is becoming aware of the importance of responsible practices in everyone's interest. Tools and systems to deal with known diseases, I think, are really, we're doing quite well there. We have the tools to deal with most things. We can develop them relatively rapidly when new diseases emerge. And we have international systems of cooperation to see that they're implemented as soon as possible. And I think the restriction of infectious myonecrosis virus to Indonesia is a really good example of the way in which these things can be managed with international cooperation. Our response to newly emerging diseases is also improving. I think we've got a long way to go, but the response that we've seen to EMS has been far more rapid. A very, very difficult problem, a very difficult disease to understand. It didn't follow the normal pattern of what we've seen in the past of a bacterial or viral disease, a phage associated with a bacterium that occurs very commonly everywhere. Was something that took a little while to unravel. But still, I think the response has been better, but a long way to go. The thing I'd like to focus on today, though, is the question of whether we can be more effective in reducing the risks of disease emergence before they occur. That is, once the disease has occurred, the costs become enormous. The advantage of being able to reduce the risks and reduce the numbers of new emerging diseases that we're likely to see would be of great value to the industry and the community. So if we can better understand the disease emergence process, understand, we can talk about prediction. The problem with prediction is that people think about prediction as on the 23rd of January 2015, we will see this disease emerge here. And that's not really what we're talking about. We're really saying if you participate in these types of activities, you're greatly elevating the risk that a new disease may emerge. And understanding what those activities might be and trying to avoid those activities, I think, is the future of disease control. So we should address the question of why new diseases emerge. How does this work? And I think it's really important starting point to recognise that this is largely a result of human activity. It's the result of a disturbance in a natural balance that exists between a virus or a bacterium or another microorganism and its natural environment. Pathogens are an integral part of the ecosystem, and a pathogen doesn't necessarily have a goal in life to cause disease. A pathogen's goal in life is to be transmitted, and to be transmitted as efficiently as possible. And we know that most pathogens in their natural host that have had a long association with the host devise ways of being transmitted that actually don't result in disease. Because if you kill the host, you're not necessarily going to ensure your own survival. So pathogens in their natural host typically cause benign infections. It's only when we disturb that balance, either by causing stress or putting them in a new environment, in a new host, that we see disease emerge. And that's essentially what the disease emergent process is about. So what are the things that can cause that to happen? We know by experience what some of them are. Changes in land use. Increased urbanisation has been a major driver of infectious diseases of humans, for example. new or changed farming activities, and aquaculture is probably the classical example of that type of driver. Encroachment on native forests and other natural habitats. Again, we can relate there to activities involving aquaculture. Climate change and extreme weather events. We can see migration of animals or plants into new habitats with changing climate. And we can see ambient temperatures changing the dynamics of infection, changing pathogen transmission rates, changing the distribution of, for example, in human disease, insect vectors of disease into new regions. Human conflict is a major driver of disease, and it causes environmental disturbance, it compromises the natural immunity and resistance of individuals and animals, and we see migration of human and animals out of war zones into other areas. And increased travel and unregulated trade is another major driver of disease emergence and spread. We can think about different categories of emerging infectious diseases. In one case, we can think about benign infections in the natural host. As I said, many infections are actually benign in the natural host, but something may disturb the host so that it becomes susceptible to that normally benign infection. Or we may see benign infections that move out of the natural host into a new host, and when they come to the new host, they're pathogenic. We also regard transboundary spread, or indeed the spread of diseases from an existing host into a brand new host, as an emerging disease. But that's a category that I don't think we've got time to go into today. Let's just focus on the first two. So destabilising a benign infection. So in this case, the pathogen may actually be quite common in healthy individuals, and I think we're aware of that sort of situation in the aquaculture industry as well. Disease outbreaks can occur as a result of either environmental or genetic influences. The environmental influences might be stress. The animals become stressed. The pathogen that's not normally pathogenic in its natural environment becomes pathogenic, for example, in a prawn pond, a shrimp pond, where there's poor water quality. We can see depressed immunity in the animal resulting in its emergence. Or we can see concomitant infections causing the animal to be more susceptible and then succumb to disease. We can see genetic factors such as random mutations, just a freak mutation, completely stochastic event that results in a change in the pathogen from being non-pathogenic to pathogenic. Recombination between different organisms can result in pathogenic combinations of genes. And we can see the transfer of virulence factors, and EMS in shrimp is a good example of a virulent bacteriophage being responsible for the spread of the disease. Transmission to a new host. Now, in classical terms, in human and animal health, this is called spillover. It's the concept that the reservoir host, we call it, that is the natural host, spreads, or the pathogen spreads out of that, spills over out of the natural host into a brand new host. Now, for that to happen, it requires that the new host be exposed to the pathogen. That is, that may be a situation that doesn't normally occur, but that opportunity for exposure is presented. So you're bringing the new host into the environment of the pathogen. Once it's in that environment, it's required that the new host actually be susceptible to the pathogen. So you can put the pathogen in the vicinity, you can put the new host in the vicinity of the pathogen, but nothing will happen unless it's susceptible. And we know that hosts that are more closely related tend to be more susceptible. So that if you put, for example, a pathogen in the vicinity, a new host in the vicinity of a shrimp pathogen, if the new host is another crustacean, it's more likely to be susceptible than it's of a fish or a mollusk. What happens then in the new host is this delicate balance that maintains the non-pathogenic infection gets upset. It's all out of whack now. And that's the situation in which disease occurs. And that can be because the natural innate immunity of the new host is not as effective as it was in the natural host. And it may be that for efficient transmission, the new host is selecting for variants that are highly pathogenic and so grow in large numbers to initiate the infection process. So in the new host, that can lead to high replication rates and pathogenicity. So we can bring all of this together to begin to look at where we can approach understanding of individual cases and the process as a whole. I won't go into the details of this right now, but just look at the headline headings we're seeing. You've all seen this diagram before, I'm sure, of the interaction between host, pathogen and environment. What we're trying to do here is pull apart the components of that interaction and understand the pathogen influences, the host influences, anthropogenic influences and geophysical influences. Those are environmental influences that are beyond human control. So think about aquaculture. When we think about aquaculture, we have to think about geoeconomic and ecological changes on a massive scale. Changes in land use. Over 2 million hectares of shrimp ponds have appeared on the earth perhaps since the mid-1970s. Changes in the ecology of aquatic animals, more than 220 farm species. They're in terrestrial ponds. We have shrimp in terrestrial ponds. We have fish in sea cages. We feed them artificial or, in some cases, live feeds, but artificial or alternative feeds. At one time when vanami was coming to Asia, we saw an estimated 28,000 vanami broodstock per month being translocated from the Americas into the Asian region. 1.5 million tons of American prawns farmed in Asia and 4.5 million tons of shrimp product traded globally. So we're taking animals out of a natural environment. Sometimes we're putting them in conditions that are stressful. We put them in high stocking densities, so when they get sick, they transmit disease very easily. And then we trade them all around the world to spread the diseases. That's what we do. Now, I'm not saying we can't do that, but I'm saying it's important to understand that that's what we do, and that's why we're seeing the emergence and spread of new diseases. So practices that encourage the emergence and spread of disease, let's think about what some of these might be. Farming in unnatural environments. You know, a shrimp pond, a shrimp can potentially encounter an insect, that is, shrimp and insects are arthropods. They're related organisms. There are opportunities for other invertebrates, particularly arthropods, to spread their viruses into shrimp. And perhaps Torres syndrome virus may be an example of one in which that's occurred. Perhaps white spot syndrome virus is an example in which that's occurred. That's the origins of each of those viruses remain obscure. Polyculture, again, mixing animals. Now, that may seem like a good natural farming approach, and it certainly there's evidence that it has a lot going for it, but it also creates an environment where we may be setting ourselves up to see the transfer of pathogens from one animal into another and the spread of disease. Use of unnatural or unprocessed feeds. I think that's one that, amongst all of these industries, probably most aware. Exposure to stress, culturing in high density, and unregulated or illegal trade. So I think, as already been said this morning, EIDs will continue to emerge. Before they emerge, we need to be better aware of the risks, and we need to be able to avoid practices and policies that present high risks. And we need to ensure that we adhere to generic biosecurity measures. This was mentioned in the biosecurity session 2 days ago. We need to be thinking more about generic approaches to biosecurity rather than agent-specific approaches, so that when a new disease emerges, we have generic measures in place that are likely to limit the consequences. Post-emergence, we need a rapid and coordinated response. We need good interaction between research, regulatory and bodies and industry. We need a capability to rapidly identify and characterise responsible pathogen and develop tests so that they can be deployed very rapidly to respond. We need to be also very effective in extending to farmers. We need to communicate, train, maintain awareness of the new pathogen. We need systems that will allow us to do those things very rapidly and effectively when new diseases emerge. And we need cooperation at the local, national, international level in containment and eradication. And I think for those of you that know NACA well, NACA has played an absolutely crucial role in the past in many of these activities, and it's really important that NACA continues to be able to play that role in the Asian region. Just finally, Africa. If we think about where we're likely to see the next big disease emergence problems, Africa, many habitats suitable for aquaculture. There's massive Chinese investment in Africa. I've spent some time there in the last couple of years, and really the Chinese engagement with Africa is quite incredible. And great potential for socioeconomic development, which aquaculture could contribute to. But we also have in Africa a very rich and diverse ecology. Africa has been the source of many human and animal diseases that we're all familiar with. And it could potentially be a major source of new disease for industries such as aquaculture. Many unknown pathogens may be lurking there. And there are poor systems in place in many countries for regulation and governance. And there are poor training and resources for aquatic animal health. So I think when we consider what can we do to manage risks associated with future disease emergence, we really do need to be thinking about the growth of aquaculture in Africa and how we might be able to invest in improving aquatic animal health awareness and regulatory systems so that when the new diseases do arise, which they certainly will, we'll be better placed to respond to them. So thank you very much. Sorry if I've run just a little bit over time, but I'm very happy to take some questions at this time.